Remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder treason and plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot.
Those boys are so handsome!
One writer.
One artist.
One weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I'm your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. This is episode 26. It's the half-iversary.
You sound way too intense for the half-iversary.
What should I be like?
Should just be bouncing off the walls.
Should I be nostalgic?
Maybe.
Oh, the good old days.
The good old days of half a year ago.
When things were called different things.
When we said different words.
We said words in slightly different orders.
Yeah. And we were even worse at this.
We weren't sponsored by Powerade Zero.
The millions of dollars that Powerade Zero gives us.
The zero-calorie sports drink with elevated flavor.
Ooh, it does say elevated flavor.
It's
We're both drinking Powerade Zero right now.
It's the purple flavor.
We're both drinking purple Thulu flavor.
Mmm, purple. Here, listen.
That's some good, disgusting radio right there. I love hearing liquid go down your throat. I'm glad you spent so much money on a microphone so we can hear that.
It's important that we get all of it.
Every disgusting sound.
Exactly. It's worth the extra $20. That's our recommendation for this week is Powerade Zero Purple.
I think it's disgusting, but I drink it anyway.
Shh. Don't let them hear you say that.
All right.
So this is episode 26. We're very excited.
Can't you tell?
Let's see. By the time you're hearing this, it should be a very special date.
Yes. That you should remember.
You should remember it twice, even. Remember. We are reading V for Vendetta this week in Nerdboy Book Club. A little foreshadowing in honor of Guy Fawkes Day.
Mm-hmm.
And those plastic masks.
We're also blowing up some buildings. But let's keep that on the DL.
Yes, let's not release that on any kind of public record or a podcast.
Yes, because if any buildings get blown up, they might pin it on us.
Yes, because all the evidence points to us. And then
it does. I mean,
and some kind of public confession certainly wouldn't help.
You might not have known this, but Robbie is the leader of a terrorist ring. He doesn't like me to talk about it.
Or the... It's the CLF.
Yeah.
It's the Cat Liberation Front.
Yes. that is an issue dear to your heart, isn't it?
It is. I free all the little kitty cats.
Not the cats, but the kitty cats. Let's keep that in mind. It is important that they're a specific sub-breed of cat that's a kitty cat. Every time you talk about cats, I think about that XKCD.
Where it's a kitty!
Yes, it shows the I don't know what kind of plot that is, where it shows a person's rationality plotted against their proximity to a cat.
Yes.
And it shows the guy walking closer to a cat, and he gets next to the cat, and he goes, "You're a kitty!"
That's me.
That's you. That's exactly you.
It is me. You're a kitty.
You're a kitty. You have to say it like that. That's how it sounds in my head.
That's how I talk to my cats all day.
It is. You're like, oh, I'm a kitty. That's my impression of you.
Kudos. That's pretty good.
I know. So, you didn't know my voice went that high, did you?
I think I you know.
You've heard it. I've done a lot of high voices. I have a lot of falsettos.
You do silly voices.
Silly, huh?
Silly. They're silly.
Yes, they are silly. Well,
we got some foolishness out of the way, because
it's all serious from now on.
From that one, this moment on, we're going to go jump right into checking in.
Man, that was intense.
I know. Eric, go first.
Oh, no. Eric, not prepared. Because I do nothing but work, I have started reading a new book. Because Audible decided to go through half of the book 5 of Game of Thrones and lose my place. And I'm pretty sure I didn't listen to 95% of it and then stop. I'm pretty sure I was about 20% into the book, and now I have no idea where my place is. So I said, fuck it. And I bought myself a Neal Stephenson book instead.
Which one?
Are you familiar with Neal Stephenson? I guess you are.
A little. I've read a couple books.
What ones?
I mean, he's written so many.
Really? I didn't think that he had written that many. I mean, compared to like Stephen King or somebody who's written 100 million books last year.
Yes, he wrote 100 million last year.
Yeah, I mean at least, right?
Well, he has.
What have you read? I've read
Snow Crash.
Okay, so that's what I'm reading now. Yeah. I'm a little bit under halfway through it. I'm enjoying it quite a lot. It reminds me a lot of Ready Player One.
I have not read that.
Ready Player One is a very weird book, and it's got a lot of the same sort of themes. You know, it's about a world that, you know, society has taken a sharp, you know, decline, and people sort of live on the internet, which is virtual reality. And having read Snow Crash, that describes both of those books pretty well. Although I like the way Snow Crash is going. You know,
It's a good book.
It's unreal that it came out in 92.
Yeah, I know.
Stevenson.
Way before its time.
Oh, yeah. Neal Stephenson is a smart, smart guy. The first book of his I read is called Anthem. Have I told you about Anthem?
Maybe. I don't remember.
Apparently all of his books have very strange... To my knowledge, all of his books have very sort of unusual premises. The premise of Anthem is all the characters are sort of a sect of monks, but instead of a religion, they're all like professors of physics and philosophy, and they save the world from aliens using their brains, and it's pretty awesome.
That sounds good.
Yeah, it's really quite excellent. I enjoy it very thoroughly, and I'm having a ball going through Snow Crash right now. So I think I'm going to have to read more of Mr. Stevenson. He is a good fella. But it is a weird book. I think it's worth pointing out, and I'm sure you know, it's the main character's name is literally Hero Protagonist.
I know.
It's so strange. But it's exactly the kind of book, you know. I think it was actually his first breakout book, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's probably the one.
I mean, he was like
one. The first one, he got recognized.
Yeah, you know yeah. I mean, he was like an ex-programmer, and he's always been obsessed with sword fighting. So that is what this book is about, is a computer programmer that is a swordsman. And his name is Hero Protagonist. And Jesus Christ, that's all weird. So, Robbie, what have you done this week?
Funny you should ask that, Eric.
It is funny. That's amazing. What did you do for 25 hours yesterday?
For 25 hours yesterday, I played board games, your favorite thing in the entire world.
Yeah, I was thinking about that as you were, like, live blogging this shit on Facebook. I'm like, this is hell. I'm really glad that I'm not doing what you're doing right now. That I cannot imagine anything worse.
I started at 8 a.m., actually slightly before 8 a.m. on Saturday, playing board games for charity for the Extra Life Gaming Marathon. Benefits, all benefits went to Miracle Children's Network, a whole bunch of hospitals throughout the United States. I raised over $200 for them. I got myself a fancy t-shirt. We played games for 25 hours, just under 25 hours. We didn't want to start something new, and considering some games can take 4 to 5 hours, we didn't want to go, 29 hours.
Robbie, it's for the children.
I know it's for the children. I know they were heartbroken when I quit 24 hours mm-hmm. and 45 minutes. But I started 8 a.m. on Saturday, and I did not stop until like 7:30 a.m. on Sunday. Straight through with the time, including the time change, so that's an extra hour.
Mm-hmm.
Played probably over a dozen games, including several that took 3 to 4 hours. Which I know is your idea of paradise, Eric.
It is the exact opposite of that.
But
it's terrible.
I gorged myself on a multitude of terrible, terrible food. Just cookies and candy. And someone just brought candy bars. Giant-sized candy bars left over from Halloween. Well, I am a man. What are they? I can't fight that.
Okay.
I can't
fight. I was wondering where you were going with that.
I can't fight those urges.
So, I'm a man, not a garbage disposal. What are you talking about, Robbie? I don't understand where this is going. I'm a man, not a wombat.
You present me with a Mr. Goodbar that is the size of an iPad. What am I supposed to do to that? Not eat it?
Yes.
No.
That is what you're supposed to do.
No, I have to eat it all and then drink Monster Energy drinks and feel like I'm going to throw up while I play Game of Thrones, the board game.
Oh, God. Every bit of this is so unappealing.
And then Kim made some baked ziti, a couple trays of that, we still have a whole tray left of baked ziti in our fridge.
And you guys are hardcore off the keto.
Yeah, we're... It's tough.
And then I ate a bag of sugar.
Well, sugar is quite delicious. I probably ate a pound of sugar yesterday among all the food.
Maybe so.
All that garbage I ate. But
I ate a pound. That's not really that much.
Not really, considering all the food I ate. There's probably a pound of sugar in there somewhere. I mean, it was an entire day. I didn't sleep.
Fair. Not sleeping. That will make you crave awful shit. I mean, you kind of have to, you got to replace that awful
you
shit.
You have to you're not sleeping, so you have to replace all that with food.
It's true.
And I ate all kinds of garbage, played tons of great games, they had a great turnout. I mean, there was like 7 or 8 people there when we called it a day this morning. Three of us made it the entire time.
And you're counting yourself as one of them, even though you quit 15 minutes early?
We all quit 15 minutes early.
You couldn't even play a game of Pogs?
I was dozing off at the table while we were playing card games.
Oh, what a baby.
Whatever.
I
don't see you doing something you hate for 25 hours straight.
You hate it?
No, I love gaming.
Okay, well.
But you hate it.
I don't see you doing something you hate either.
You hate it, though, so you do it.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it was a lot of fun. Extralife.org is a website. You can go there and still donate. And there was, I can't believe this, but, it's like a huge thing. I mean, it's not just board games. People could do it with video games. However they want to, any kind of gaming is acceptable to try and, do the donation drive for. But the website got repeated denial of service attacks. a charity website on its biggest day of the year.
The denial of service attack, so that was them?
They got hit three times. Extra Life. Fit.
I didn't realize that it was the same one. I know people were talking about it on the Reddit.
Yeah.
But I had no idea that it was...
On the day it's happening, where right. people are trying to donate money, you know, to help kids with cancer, etc., and hackers.
Do you know who was bankrolling those denial of service attacks?
No.
It was cancer.
Oh, that motherfucker.
Yeah, cancer is striking back and is paying Russian botnets to attack this place.
You've been reading too much Neal Stephenson.
I am Neal Stephenson.
Oh, shit. It all makes sense now.
Shave my head and stab you with a sword.
It all makes sense now.
And have a botnet kill you.
A botnet.
Do you know what a botnet is?
No idea what a botnet is.
A botnet is like a collection of computers that have like viruses that use their processing power to do these denial of service attacks. I mean, it could be 1,000 computers that are infected, mm-hmm. but, you know, it might be some guy in Russia. It's always Russians that is, like, the mastermind behind it. Isn't that neat?
That is.
You could be a part of a botnet and not know it. That's what's awesome about it.
It doesn't sound that awesome, actually.
Yeah, that's what I mean by awesome. I mean really not awesome and kind of fucking scary.
Yes.
That's a real thing.
Well, I had a lot of fun with my gaming marathon. I'll probably do it next year as well. Not until next year. I might even have to skip some board game nights because that's a lot of social interaction, you know, in a very short period of time without sleep.
Without sleep.
You start going crazy. But other than that, tons of fun. Go to extralife.org and donate. Please. Kids need it. You know, so they'll still be accepting donations. So that is it for checking in.
Feels so checked.
Yep.
It's so good.
Next up, it's the floppiest part of the week. I know Eric's excited.
I mean... I save all my floppy for this point just to get it all out in one day.
Exactly. And it is time for weekly floppies.
I don't flop around at all any other part of the week.
Only right now. We save it all. We bottle it up. Mm-hmm. Bottle floppy. Floppy bottle.
I mean, send me an email. I'll send you a bottle of floppy. I am prepared to share.
Share the floppy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what we're talking about.
I don't think it matters.
We're going to jump
in. Aren't you having a good time?
That's true. It's fun is all that matters. We're going to jump in with Damien, Son of Batman, written and drawn by Andy Hubert, with colors by Brad Anderson, letters by Nick Napolitano. So, Eric, what do you think about this book?
I'm glad you get to give me a chance to talk about it. I think it's shit. I'm not gonna get on the fence about this one. I tried hard to like this. Every bit of it is retarded. It makes zero sense, and it's the same like trying to be gritty and hardcore. It's so friggin' dumb. Oh, my God. The whole premise of it is that Batman's dead, and then at the end of one issue, the twist is Batman's not dead. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, my favorite part of this issue? Can you guess?
Oh, no, I can't guess. Is it the fish that explodes?
No, it's the little cat that's on the last page. The Bat-Cat. Oh.
I guess I should have guessed that, shouldn't I?
That's the only thing I really...
Because you were probably reading this, and you're like, this book is awful. And then you get to the end, and you're like, Kitty! And then you love it.
No, I don't love this book. This book is fucking terrible.
Good. I'm glad we agree that this book is awful.
It's really bad.
I don't know why Bruce Wayne is dressed like he just got out of prison.
I know, really. He looks like a fucking ex-con.
Yeah.
I've been in prison this whole time. What's your problem?
And he calls him father.
He is his dad.
Well, I know, but have you ever addressed your dad as father?
Only ironically.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Do you think he's like, oh, father?
No.
I mean, no.
Okay, yeah, this is, it's for those who are not, know nothing about it, it's it's set in the future. Damien is not dead, because he's dead now, so theoretically.
He's dead to me.
Well, yeah, I mean, in current day, New 52, he's dead. But now he's alive again, he's older, he's Robin still. Batman is killed by an exploding Joker fish, and now Damien is out for revenge on every villain. It's like the whole story is mostly told through his little journal entries, which is the most awful, stupid, self-indulgent crap I've ever read. And it's so cliched, so overdone. I knew death better than anyone. I had flirted with death on many occasions.
I think
I've never heard that before, except in a thousands of stories.
I think Richmond should read that.
I don't even know if it deserves that.
I think it does.
I knew death better than anyone.
Oh, that warms my heart.
No matter how many times I saw death, no matter how seasoned I thought I was, I still couldn't get intimate with it, especially the stench. God, that is terrible. Ugh, and every line of dialogue is just as bad. It's completely no one talks like this on Earth. No one is like this. You get appearance of Ra's al Ghul and Talia al Ghul, and they have some weird secret mission about. They want to make him be the next Batman, and then he starts killing off people, and he's all hulked out in his little weird hoodie. He's suddenly the Punisher.
Yep.
It's terrible. It's all just terrible. The art's nice enough.
And I don't really care for it. You don't? It's not like it's horrible, but it is, I think, as corny.
It's very overdone, and like the facial expressions are ridiculous. Like the first page, you just look at the first page, and he's like, Robin's mouth is like wide open, and there's a lot of stuff like that where it's just. I mean, I do like the exploding fish. That looks cool.
It's still an exploding fish, though.
I know, but it's just everything about this book is like trite and cliched and ridiculous and not fun. It's just it tries to be grim and gritty, and it's stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Awful. If you haven't gotten any of like the clue from what we've just said, do not buy this book. Don't even look at it. Don't talk about it. Don't give it any kind of pay it no mind. Do not buy. Eric, I assume you agree with me.
I don't think I would recommend this book to anyone.
So, we're going to wash the taste of that out of our mouths. Get a little palate cleanser with the Sandman Overture, number one. The Return of the Sandman. This is kind of a prequel, if you want to be so simple with it, to all the stuff that happens in the proper Sandman stories. And it's great. It's Neil Gaiman and J.H. Williams III. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, it's great. It's unbelievable.
I think J.H. Williams is kind of off my radar, and I regret that because this is Some of the most beautiful art I've seen in a comic.
He did. He was doing Batwoman.
Oh, with all the Well, anything I would say would be asinine. With all the nice art.
Yes.
Although this seems almost nothing like that.
No, it doesn't. It's.
But it's interesting.
Yeah,
it's certainly an interesting book. I'd say my only criticism of it is it's got a little bit of that first episode-itis. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Explain.
It's like a long return after, a hiatus like this.
Yes.
And they have to show all these characters, and you're like, remember this guy? Remember this guy? Look at all this stuff you remember. It's kind of fan wanky that way.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I was going to say that Neil Gaiman, I mean, obviously his storytelling is great. The only thing, like, if it was anyone but him or maybe a few other people, just having like just tons of text,
yeah,
just like laid out on a page. It's not really excusable for a lot of the time. I mean, just like five paragraphs in half of a page. It's not dialogue. It's not narration. It's just
expository
like stuff that tells you what's happened, like stuff that's here. This is the story. But because it's Neil Gaiman, it's really good exposition.
Hmm.
And the art that accompanies it is so beautiful.
Yeah. I wouldn't even call it expository. I don't know. I wonder how relevant it's going to be. It probably will be relevant later on. They'll probably tie it back in. But it just felt like him wanting to write some pretty prose.
Yes.
That's how it read to me.
Yeah, it is very... It's pretty prose. But, I mean...
Yeah.
The panel layouts and how this mm-hmm. book is constructed is super imaginative.
It's very clever, definitely.
Yeah, there's a creature in here that has teeth like mouths in his eyes.
Okay, you don't know the Corinthian.
No, I don't know his name.
See, that's what's interesting about this is I have read all of the original Sandman books.
I haven't.
I've probably read them through a half dozen times.
Wow. Okay.
So, I mean, no, they were a huge part of my life. The fourth Sandman trade was actually what got me back into reading comics when I was in college. So, this old Neil Gaiman stuff was really near and dear to my heart. I actually bought this book on my own, and then later found that you had it on the list of books for this week. I'm glad that was the case.
Yeah.
And I knew that you hadn't finished reading The Sandman yet, that you've only read a couple.
Yeah, I'm not even halfway through them, I think.
Yeah, no, the Corinthian, he's been an important character in a lot of different stories.
Okay.
And I don't know. He's pretty fascinating.
But one of the pages is all the panels are drawn on teeth within one of his eye sockets.
Yes.
Which is incredibly creepy, but really mm-hmm. cool. It's really interesting. And every page, they managed to make every single page, you know, different while still communicating the story.
Mm-hmm.
Effectively, which isn't—I mean, the story is not really that complicated. Again, like Eric said, it does have that kind of like reintroduction.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, they make a point. They show a bunch of the endless. They show death. Just almost like they're obligated to show her.
Yeah, they almost are.
They show. I want to say it's Merv. Pumpkinhead guy?
Yeah.
It's something Pumpkinhead. I can't remember his name.
The janitor.
Yeah. He's pretty special. I don't know that like they're showing it's like the greatest hits of characters that would make sense for them to be here.
Yeah. But I mean we could if you enjoy comic books, go buy this.
Mm-hmm.
It's excellent.
I really wonder how this stands up for someone, because you've not read much of The Sandman. Do you think if you hadn't read any of it, that if you weren't really introduced to these characters, do you think you could follow what was going on?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it still tells you enough to, you know, let you know what's happening. I mean, obviously, I don't think you need to read any of The Sandman to enjoy this. I haven't read a lot of it. I've read some. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm, you know, vaguely familiar with most of the main characters. But then
that was what Neil Gaiman said about the original Sandman trades, is you can read them in order, or you can read them out of order, you can read them as individual volumes. It doesn't matter. They hold together that way. And I'm really wondering if there's enough information in this individual book that I would recommend it for someone that has not read The Sandman. Like, is this going to be a good jumping in point for the rest of the Sandman series? Or would I recommend that someone read Season of Mists, for instance, first?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say, because, I mean, there's going to be five more issues of this.
And I know that I have not historically enjoyed reading Gaiman in a month-to-month format. I don't like reading one short chapter and then having to wait for the next one.
And this could be 2 months before it's every other month this gets released.
That's terrible. So this won't be done for a year.
Yep.
That makes me want to pull my own head off.
Your entire head.
It would take me all day.
But that's what we're looking at.
Yeah. It's going to be brutal. I think I'm going to have to wait for the trade on this, because I don't know. Every other thing that I've read from Gaiman, I don't think I could survive the month-to-month. But when you read a whole arc, it works really well.
Yeah.
But I was still excited to buy this book.
Yeah. It's great.
I still don't know where I stand on the buy-don't-buy scale, though. I think it's excellent. I just don't know that I would... I don't know if I'd recommend it to someone if they weren't already a huge fan of The Sandman.
I would.
You think so?
Yes.
Okay. And I guess that's really your answer, because you have not read most of it and it works for you.
Yeah. It's good enough art that it can overcome, you know, people aren't aware of all the characters or whatever.
Does it make you want to read the rest of the story?
Sure. Yeah. It certainly left me intrigued.
I think The Sandman, it's the kind of book that people that do not like comics should read.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was really sort of sick of comics when I started reading it, and, you know, it was a great gateway drug.
Sandman, it brought you in.
It did.
So, are you officially a buy?
I think so. I might be selective about who I'd recommend it to, but by and large, I think it's excellent and it's got a lot of merit, and I'm truly excited to see where it's going to go.
Okay, so that's Sandman Overture number one. We are both buys.
Is the cat at the end of the book also your favorite part in this one?
No, I think it's that panel with the teeth. That's just so interesting. Such an interesting juxtaposition, like really creative storytelling and then really disgusting visuals.
Yeah. Well, you should read, I want to say it's book three, and I can't remember which one that is. But that's the introduction of the Corinthian, where he is the guest of honor at a convention of serial killers.
Ah.
It's a really awesome story.
So we're going to jump out of DC into Marvel. And a double dose of Infinity this week. We're going to start with Infinity number 5. This is written by Jonathan Hickman, art by Jeremy Opeña and Dustin Weaver, colors by Justin Ponsor, and letters by Chris Elopia. Every week I can't say this.
Elopia. It's okay. Elopola. Talking is hard.
Elopolis. All right. Whatever that was. And this this issue really brings us kind of almost a denouement to the conflict with the builders. Like, you see them, mm-hmm. you know, planet by planet, slowly take them out, and they're turning them into, like, Avengers worlds.
It's kind of absurd, but that's just really sort of the way the storytelling has been done in this. Otherwise, as much content and potential this has, this could still, like we've said, this could go on for years telling the story, so they just brush over it. They're just like, oh yeah, now they're winning.
Yeah, you see Thor and Cap share some alcoholic beverages, which I think is like a really little nice scene.
Yeah,
and then we get see Thane, and he gets captured by Thanos' men, and kind of this starts the shift of the story from outer space to Earth. Mm-hmm. You know, heavily focused on Earth, with them wanting to fight Thanos on Earth. I want to say this book, among all the other Infinity books, wasn't, you know, amazing or anything. I mean, but it's still very good.
Mm-hmm.
And the art is still great. I enjoyed it a lot. I enjoyed the drinking buddy Cap and Thor. You know, you get to see the Hulk smash. You get to see Thanos being, you know, Thanos. We get a little bit more insight into Thane. It's moving things along. It's putting pieces into place. I enjoyed it.
It sounds like you're kind of cooling on it, though.
Well, this issue, again, is a stepping stone for a lot of things. It provides little pieces here and there. Nothing amazing. Provides cool stuff, but nothing we haven't seen before for the most part. The next book in this week we're reading is the next one is Avengers 22, also came out. I like that one more, but they're part of the same story, so it's hard for me to criticize this one because the next one wouldn't make sense if they don't lay out some of the pieces in this one.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not super exciting because they're, you know, laying foundations for other things. They're shifting the story. I mean, the story has so much in it. I still like it though. I don't dislike it. I don't regret buying it. I'm happy I read it. It's just not as good as some of the moments. This is not the issue you're going to be remembering from the event.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's the next to the last one.
Yeah, exactly. It's the next to the last one, which means it's not. You know, it's never going to be going, oh, I loved Infinity number 5. It's my favorite of all of them.
You don't remember the setup, you remember the spike.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, it's good. It certainly is not bad. I am a buy. That is my recommendation for this, because it's still really good. The art is still good, and there's certainly some good moments in it. And it tells the story very well. It's executed very competently.
I think that, I think I agree pretty much on everything. And I would recommend it, too, because it seems dumb to be all in for Infinity and then get to number 5. And you're like, buy everything but number 5. Thane is apparently really, really, really dumb.
Yeah, I know. Seriously.
That he's just like, hey there, sinister-looking stranger. Why don't I put on these clothes that you're giving me for no reason? I've never met you before.
He calls him. He literally calls this guy a monster. But then goes, oh, all right, I'll jump in your suit. What? Why? You have those... I just don't understand. Why would you...
He's completely, completely senseless.
Yeah, I know. It makes no sense. You mean that your glowing tube is gonna capture me?
How could that possibly be a trap?
I know. Jesus.
I think the Terrigen mist stripped him of his common sense.
I know. I guess he hasn't read enough comic books.
I guess not.
Famous.
Or anything.
Or anything. He's out in this like little, you know, he's too busy mending broken arms or something.
I guess.
And now
so.
and killing entire villages now.
Yeah. Blowing up children.
But at least we get a little insight into his you know, process. We see that, you know, he doesn't like that he's killed all these people. You know, he's upset that he's not, you know, he wanted to put his father's name behind him, and now you see that he's obviously not happy about it. We get a little bit of everything in this book. Again, it's nothing monumental happens, but it's still good. I'm gonna buy.
Yeah. Buy it, people.
Peoples. All you peoples.
Yep.
Next book up is the next, also an Infinity tie-in, Avengers number 22, next step in the story. I like this one a little bit more. Also written by Jonathan Hickman, art by Lineo Francis Yu, inkers Jerry Alangalin, colors Sonny Go with David Curiel, letters Corey Pettit. We also get a Miranda shot, which I laughed my ass off when I saw that. I was like, oh.
I noticed it.
I was like, Lineo. Cannot
he's
go.
Back. He's back to his old tricks.
I know, one issue without it. And oh, we got to draw someone with a giant ass. Seems
he's got like the weirdest, like pinched expressions on this first page. God, it's just so strange. Right, it's the page before the Miranda shot.
Right. Yes.
She does have a thunderous booty, doesn't she?
Apparently, every superheroine in the Marvel universe has one.
That's the source of their power.
If Lillian Francis Yu is drawing them, apparently they all have gigantic hips and a gigantic. Butts.
Yes. It gives them superpowers.
I guess so. We see a little bit more movement in this one. We see as they are mobilizing for their attack on Thanos. We get Gateway having some kind of moral, ethical, I don't know, a dilemma about his, I don't know, fate. But, you know, both Cap and both the Caps. Marvel and America give him a pep talk, and then Thor gives him an additional pep talk.
Cap squared.
And now,
Cap.
Cap.
Oh my god. Really?
Yeah, it's like Hawk.
Is it?
It's just like Hawk. It's Cap.
We're about to see the big battle between them and Thanos. What's left of the Earth intergalactic, you know, forces. With all the Shi'ar and the Super Skrull and the Annihilation Wave and all that. And you see Thanos' forces, you know, preparing Shi'ar Imperial Guard, taking out some guys on Titan, which is Thanos' turf. But I liked it. It's good. Setting the stage. We have three issues left in Infinity. So, you know, we're about to get the big payoff at the end. So we're at the verge of a major another gigantic space battle. I assume a show off with Thanos on Earth, which I'm excited about. So I'm a buy on this. Lineo Francis Yu, aside from him drawing gigantic booties on women, does a good job. I like it.
I'm not going to come out and say that drawing gigantic booties on women is a bad thing. It's just. Yeah. Maybe it's not the best thing. If you're trying to tell a story. And not just show Miranda shots.
He sneaks them in there.
He does. He's very sneaky about it. And, you know, it's about as subtle as putting a big ass right on the viewer's, like, plane of reference there.
Yeah, I know.
It's about as subtle as sitting on someone's face.
Well, that can be subtle. You never know. It depends how you do it.
It can be subtle.
It can be, but not generally.
Not generally.
No. But I'm a buy. I mean, everything I said for Infinity, it's a little bit better than the Infinity 5, I would say. Again, it's still very well executed, very competent. They're setting the stage for the big showdown at the end. So, I've read so much of this. Why would I stop now? It's still good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, we're both buys.
I would be a more enthusiastic buy if it was, like, at least four more Miranda shots.
Well, we still have another Avengers issue coming up, so...
Well, there's always hope.
There's always hope. And, I mean, Lino Francis-Yu, he is still a young man. I think he's still in his maybe mid-30s. So
there's potential for thousands more.
I know. He can go on for
thousands more unnecessary butts.
Exactly. I'll pick one up every week just for you, Eric. I'll put it on the list.
Nice.
Yep. So we're done with Marvel. We're going to go to our indie book of the week. There's a little competition. I didn't know which one to pick. I decided to go with Ash and the Army of Darkness, number one, a tie-in book to Army of Darkness. And I wanted to see if it was going to be good.
In my opinion, you've chosen poorly.
It's a direct sequel to Army of Darkness. It happens right after. It's written by Steve Niles, art by Dennis Calero, letters by Marshall Dillon. It's basically we see Ash apparently never escaped the past.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't say the words correctly with the Necronomicon, and now he's back. And the wizard is now an evil wizard, I should say. And
that's what it does to you.
Yes, that's what it does. Apparently, Eric didn't like this book.
No, I love huge fan wanks for no reason.
It's a licensed book.
I know.
So you don't like any licensed books?
In general, no, I do not.
Okay. You don't. Did you like?
I mean, I just don't usually care for them. I like Army of Darkness. Okay. I guess I should set the scene with that I'm not an enormous fan of any of these movies. I've seen them, and I think they're okay.
Okay.
They're fun, but this just seems like it's pandering to the fans rather than...
Well, yes.
It's just saying the catchphrases from the movie... And not really saying anything funny or clever at all. I don't know. It's not horrible by any stretch of the imagination, but it doesn't do it for me.
Yeah, it's like you said. I generally agree with you. I mean, I really do like Army of Darkness quite a bit. And again, this takes the story in a logical... I mean, if you're going to put him back in the past, I mean, it puts it in a logical place. But it's kind of... There's... You know, parts where, like, he has his two co-workers come back with him.
Mm-hmm. So they can both die.
They both die right away. What's the point of that?
Well, the woman is there, he can show us his righteous indignation because the woman died.
I know, but we don't feel anything for either of them because we've known them for 10 seconds.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it's like they're horror movie people. They're there to die.
I know, but you have to tell the story. You still have to make us feel something for them. You kill one of them. You got the dopey guy with the arrow in the eye. Okay. But then if you're going to make us feel something when the woman does die, you let us grow attached to her for more than 3 pages. But, I mean,
you don't have to do any of that stuff, and I don't have to like this book.
I guess so.
That's what happens. They didn't do any of that stuff, and I don't like the book.
I mean, it's not that I don't like it. I guess I would, if you're not a diehard Army of Darkness fan, because they do capture, I think, the feelings of the movie and kind of the comic timing and stuff. I feel like they captured very well. Do you like the art, Eric? How do you feel about it?
I think it's good. It's whenever you see something like this, it feels like the artist is spending so much of his energy trying to make the character look like, you know, the people from the movie. Like, this guy's just going to be drawing caricatures of Bruce Campbell.
Yeah.
And not really focusing on, you know, telling a story the right way or making panels that read well. I mean, he's just going to be fighting against that his whole time. Because if that doesn't look convincingly like Bruce Campbell, it's really gonna stand out. So I don't know. I feel like he's done a pretty reasonable job. It's not awful, but nothing about it really excites me.
Yeah.
It just feels like so much of it's going towards that.
Okay. Well, I agree with you for the most part. It looks good, but it's not nothing, you know, stunning or anything like that.
Right.
again, I'm a buy with the caveat, if you are a diehard fan, I don't think I'd buy this again. So if I, you know, if I had the choice, I would not rebuy.
Yeah, well, I feel if you're an Army of Darkness super fan, you're probably buying it anyway, no matter what I say. I think it's bad, and I don't think anyone should read it. And if you like it, you're stupid for liking it.
So that's Ash and the Army of Darkness number one. We're both mostly do not buys on that.
Correct.
So, folks, now we're going to move on to the Nerd Boy Book Club. Remember, it is time for V for Vendetta by Alan Moore and David Lloyd. A classic. One of the many classics from Alan Moore. The original writer. Alan Moore, the original writer. One of his many well-regarded, you know, classic tomes. This V for Vendetta takes place in the future, the near future. Now it's set in the past, technically. It was written in, what, 83?
It was finished in 81.
Finished in 83. It was set in the late 90s.
Yeah. 98, 99, yep. Something like that.
Yeah. And it's basically, Britain has turned into a fascist nation after kind of a worldwide nuclear war, kind of collapse of many other countries, where they've killed all the people that aren't white, basically. And there's cameras everywhere. Government's in big government, Big Brother, in control with the leader, a dictator, and various other strong arm groups that keep control of the country, keep an eye on everyone, listening on everything, propaganda. All that, and then there is a kind of this freedom fighter or terrorist, depending on your perspective, of called V, wears a Guy Fawkes mask, and is trying to disassemble this government. Eric, what are your overall thoughts on V for Vendetta? I know you suggested it. I know we both read it beforehand. I mean, I've read it a few times now.
Yeah, this is probably my at least third read through, probably more like fourth or fifth. It's pretty interesting. Amongst the only thing that it's even similar to, in my opinion, of other Alan Moore that I've read, is it's got some of that political edge for Watchmen. This one, I think, is it's most transparent.
Yes.
You know, Alan Moore's political leanings. He's a libertarian socialist, which, you know, by other terms is an anarchist. I don't think that he necessarily identifies with someone like V.
No, I don't think so either.
He doesn't condone any sort of violence. He's not that sort of anarchist.
No.
I can't imagine him throwing a brick through anyone's window, much less blowing up Parliament.
No, he's not.
But let me think what I'm trying to say here. If you read his foreword, it was just a lot of him venting his frustration with the Thatcher administration.
Yeah.
And a lot of their is particularly what he viewed as, very racist, very homophobic, very pro-fascist and scary. But I mean, it's a very common thing in political feuds to accuse the other side of being a fascist.
Yes.
You see it in our own country. I mean,
all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, whether there's grounds for it or not, when you look at, all the NSA spying, that we're having nowadays, and the
you mean we're finding out about nowadays?
Oh, of course.
I don't want to take us off on a,
Well, I think it's a worthy topic.
I know. I'm not surprised No, I don't.
Anyone's surprised. This is why no one's. This is why people aren't upset about it, because everyone is like, "Yeah, we."
I've met several people who are like, "I can't believe that they're doing this." I'm like, "Really?
Yeah,
you're surprised?"
Exactly.
I always have assumed that the government is watching us to a certain extent.
Yes.
I mean, I've made the joke. I don't think they care about a normal person's life for the most part.
If you think about all the information on you that's available online.
Yes.
And all the information that you give away.
Exactly.
I don't think people realize how much they're allowing people to spy on them.
Yeah.
I think if people are reacting these ways, yet they're freely giving away this information.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I don't know. They react in a way that, like, you know, they should go off the grid and live in a cabin in the woods that they they build out of buffalo dung.
They're
clearly not doing that.
Yeah. While they're posting on their Twitter account their credit card numbers.
Yeah. Look at my debit card.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Alan Moore has gone on record multiple times before he kind of went. Before the crazy period when he stopped talking about everything he wrote before, like, 2000. It's not necessarily him endorsing, you know, these activities that V does in this book. He's just showing, he wants people to think about it. You know, present, like, look at this. And I don't know if this happened to you, but, I mean, it's been a while since I've read this. At least, probably since college.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's like six.
It's probably been 5 years.
Yeah, it's been five, 6 years since I've read it. And yeah. I don't remember. Like, V is a psychopath. Like, I didn't feel.
He certainly is. I mean, understandably so. Given all the horrible things that's happened.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I don't think I felt that strongly about it,
right.
Prior reads. Like, I didn't go, like, I felt maybe more sympathy.
Yeah.
I understand his cause, and or she, whatever. It's a he, it is. V is a he.
Well, I think that it's actually left open.
Could it?
That way,
yeah.
If you don't. I mean, they say it's the man in room 5.
Yeah, they always say the man.
When they flash back, so I mean, I guess that's the assumption.
Yeah.
But there's a certain amount of androgyny in who V is, which is why, you know.
You're supposed to. That's the idea. Could be anyone.
Yeah, exactly.
But
it's an idea.
I don't feel any. I just go, well, this guy is. I mean, you can still kind of, like, admire the force of will he has.
Mm-hmm.
To accomplish all this, and obviously his actions are just to a certain extent against this kind of this almost comically totalitarian state.
Mm.
But he is not.
I don't know that I'd call it comically.
Well, I mean, it's just ridiculous. Like, I don't.
What is ridiculous about it?
I mean, it's just the links that it's shown that how terrible it is. Like, it's not enough that everyone's
getting
watched.
I don't think it's really that far-fetched.
No, I agree that this stuff happens.
I mean, like, the cameras? Like, that's a real thing in England.
No, I know there's cameras. It's not the cameras. I'm more talking about just, like, the general, like, I understand this is also Alan Moore showing, like, the also, like, very misogynist leanings mm-hmm. of the government when he was writing this.
Yeah.
But I mean, this book is like thick, anti-feminist, like women, you know, their women are constantly being attacked and crushed at spiritually, mentally in this book. And I understand why he's doing it. It's like, it's laid on thick.
I don't think that there's really no part of this, particularly people have been afraid of their government. I mean, and you think about 1984.
Yeah.
This is Alan Moore's 1984.
Yeah.
You know, 1984 was George Orwell having, like, a political sort of shakeup in his life where he was a socialist communist, and then he sees the totalitarian state of, I mean, I guess Russia. And then he writes about it coming to England.
Yeah.
Because he was terrified of fascism.
Mm-hmm.
As many people were, you know, after World War II. Because people were surprisingly pro-fascist. It's, I think that's kind of what's shocking about this book, is the whole part where the leader, you know, he's traveling around and he's giving his soliloquies on how he loves fascism.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things that I really like about this book, is it's not afraid to show the dark and light sides of these characters. The leader does terrible things, you know, to preserve a country that he loves. And he says over and over that, you know, he does it for love.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the strongest, I think, part of this book. I mean, it sells everything mm-hmm. else. The fact that mm-hmm. these are all real people.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's no, like, the characters aren't cartoony.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think, like, the pedophile priest and...
No.
And they're not showing the good sides of those characters, or the guy that's the voice of fate. They're, you know, they're not doing any of that.
They're
business,
not. Yeah, but, they're not being fleshed out as much. Although, yeah, you know, you get a little bit perspective on this. Them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that that you can even have a conversation and be like, yeah, he's a sociopath. But I mean, it's almost like all the murder and all the things that he does. You know, blowing up Parliament. It's like a smokescreen when he just really. He just really wants to get back at all the people that, I mean,
wrong.
He really just wants to get back at all the people that have done these wrongs to him.
Yeah. And that's...
I wonder how important it is that he is so anti-fascist. I mean, where do you think that ties in?
Was it his the clash between his quest for destroying the government and, but also mm-hmm. getting revenge?
I mean, what is it about his character, do you think, that's making him not just go against, not just seeking out all these government officials that have done horrible things to him? What part of the story is motivating him? I don't know. I'm just curious.
Because
it almost seems like it would be, I think, a worse story. But I'm just trying to think about what is his motivation for being like this anarchist and terrorist when he could just simply go after these people just by themselves.
Well, I think you see it when he puts Evie
mm-hmm.
through that ordeal to mm-hmm. like to test her
when she's reading
the letter
from Valerie,
yes, from the woman who shared the prison with V, who's in the room next to him. I think when I remember, that was the thing that hit me the most the first time I read this book. Because mm-hmm. I mean
that's powerful.
Yeah, it really is. When you're seeing her, you don't know Evie. You don't know that this is a fake. You think that she's really been, you know, imprisoned by the government, and she's probably going to die. And you see this really touching story about this woman who's being tortured and imprisoned only because she's a lesbian, and that's the only reason. She's a relatively famous actress, and you know, she gets sent to an internment camp to die. And, you know, when you come to the end, you find out all it's a whole charade that V has been orchestrating this entire thing with Evie. But then she goes, well, and you wrote that letter, too. He's like, I didn't write that. And that, and you see, and he grows the roses.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is his motivation. The fact that there's a world where a lovely person, you know, is tortured and killed for no reason.
I think it's interesting that he's such a sociopath and he's motivated by empathy.
Yeah.
And I think there is where it kind of doesn't make sense to me.
I think I buy it because the hard part of it is the fact that we don't know anything about who he was.
Right,
like
right.
What V was before he was in the camp, before he got changed.
Yes.
So you can't draw upon like what kind of person he was prior. You see him enjoying, you know, art, and he saved all this art and culture.
Mm-hmm.
And you see him, you know, playing the piano, singing. And she was an actress. He's always quoting, you know, works of art. And I mean, it touches upon his, I think there's some kind of romanticism in him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that makes me makes it believable to me, because he would romanticize, you know,
mm-hmm.
someone dying for a cause, and she commits to like willing to die for her principles in his whole charade. And, you know, when Valerie dies in the camp along with most everyone else, I think he does romanticize that. I mean, he gives roses, for God's sake, to people, you know, all his victims, from the people he's getting revenge on, because he grew roses there. And I think it's, he clearly is mentally ill in some extent. I mean, he is a sociopath, but I think that doesn't exclude empathy necessarily, it's at least in this, like the way he romanticizes these people's deaths. And I think they're tied closely to him. And if he is a sociopath, he would still have it, some sort of self-interest. And I'm not sure. I mean, the degree of sociopathy is hard to say, because we don't know anything about him prior to. I mean, but I can buy it.
I want to say that's probably my favorite thing about the way this ends, is how that's all left open. That's not spelled out, whether it's Eve's father or, you know, it doesn't tell you who it is, so you can speculate about this. I think that does enhance it quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, the scene where she's... you see her thinking, no, I'm going to go over, I'll pull the mask off and it'll be this person. Mm-hmm. Or I'll pull off the mask and it'll be my father. Or I'll pull off the mask and it'll be this person or whatever. And she just rejects it every time. And she says, I can't, it won't matter. It doesn't matter who he is.
Right.
And it illustrates it really well for the audience without being overt. We haven't spoken at all about the art. Do you enjoy the arc in this, Eric?
I don't remember liking it as a younger man, but I think that it's actually quite good now.
It's
very noir.
It's grown on you?
Yeah. I don't know that it's grown on me. I just think that I appreciate it a lot more.
Well, your perspective has changed.
Well, clearly.
Yeah.
But I think it suits the story very well. I think that's probably what I enjoy the most about it. Like, there's not a lot of line work in this. It's just all heavy shadows and really weird color. I'm actually shocked they were able to pull off the color as subtly as they did, considering this came out in the 80s. I have no idea how these later editions were colored. You know, the way that these were printed is just, I don't know, it's such slop, these old styles of printing. I don't know that this will ever be, it's possible that that's how this was done. It's so, like, soft and watercolory, but it will probably never be recolored in a more modern style.
No, I have the digital edition.
Oh, do you? How does it look?
It looks good. Looks how I remember it. It does certainly does not look like the. I don't think they recolored it.
Well, they kind of have to, because scanning a print of something just doesn't look right. You get moray and all kinds of awful shit going on.
I'll have to show you it, you know.
Next. Yeah, I'll have to take a look at it.
Because it doesn't... You can see what you think. It doesn't look bad. I'll say that. It looks...
I can't imagine them putting out a bad product. It had to have been recolored somehow.
I was just looking through the credits, and I did not see anything about, coloring or recoloring or anything like that. So, sorry.
Well, they rarely mention it. They want it to be kind of invisible. You don't want... If you're not thinking about the colorist of the original book, you're not going to be thinking about the colorist in the new edition. They're not going to mention it.
Did Lloyd do the colors in the original?
Who?
Did David Lloyd do the colors in the original?
You know, that is entirely possible. It could be that these were watercolors or something, and they photographed them.
Because I
printed them that way, but it typically that's not the way I think it was done at that
point. I'm just looking at the credits, and it has three people listed for coloring. Because it has David Lloyd, then it has Steve Whitaker, and Shioshan Dodds, I think. And I don't know if maybe either one of those two latter names, I don't know if they were involved in the initial coloring, or if they may have been involved in the recoloring process, if it was necessary.
It's entirely probable that these were watercolored before they went to press, and they were photographed and printed that way. I don't know. It's interesting. I'd like to know more about that process. Probably bore the pants off of most people.
Interesting, I think. I find it interesting, at least. It just because of the kind of aesthetic kind of criticism that's tied into it.
Right, about, right.
You know, the discussion we've had multiple times about differences about, you know, what very subtle changes can kind of do to how a book looks. But the panel layout in this is very... mostly tight, very, very tight and tense. And like you said, it makes you feel mystery noir. It adds to that with the heavy shadow. It makes you, and it adds to thematically, you know, you feel like you're being watched, like it's, you know, tight in, you know, get dirty feeling almost certain shots, which I think is intentional. Have you seen the movie?
I have.
What did you think about it?
It's not this book.
Yeah, I know. It's not.
It's this is not a book that should have been adapted as a movie. Like, I thought it was reasonably good given the people that worked on it. But this is something very subtle that you can have a variety of viewpoints on.
Yeah.
Like, You can feel like some degree of admiration for V, and at the same time come off and say he's a complete sociopath.
Yeah.
When in the movie, he's action hero guy fighting against bad guys.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Even if it's got some degree of subtlety and it makes an interesting statement, he's still action hero guy fighting bad guys.
Yeah.
Of all the weird things, Alan Moore criticized the scene where he made the egg toast.
He's like, that's not what English people eat for breakfast.
I've read some of Alan Moore's criticism of the film, and it really is. It's about how V is not an action hero. You're supposed to feel a dilemma rooting for him because he's not necessarily a good person.
No.
And I think that's kind of the crux of this book. It gives you interesting questions about, well, you know, what between these two extremes, where should we go? What should we do? I mean, do we feel sympathy for the, do we You know, we can't, obviously, the big brother, evil, terrible fascist government is awful, but then do we put ourselves in the hands of this sociopathic terrorist who, you know, has no qualms about murdering anyone who gets in his way, who blows up buildings, who would torture a young woman just to test her? He's not necessarily any better. He's better at the moment. And I think that by not presenting another option, I think that makes this, that makes the really provides the interesting crux.
I think V is Noam Chomsky.
Is V Noam Chomsky?
V is Noam Chomsky.
Okay, well, that makes so much sense. I knew
that everything falls into place.
It does.
V would have a very boring voice if that was the case. I have a white noise machine with Noam Chomsky's voice on it.
Puts you right to sleep every time.
It helps me go to, huh?
Puts you right to sleep every time.
It helps me sleep. It does.
You go right to bed.
Yeah.
Oh, he's all tuckered out.
I want Noam to say that to me
in the Batman voice.
That's the Batman voice.
Yeah.
Noam Chomsky is Batman.
Is anything else you want to discuss about this, Eric?
I don't know. I feel like we've covered all of my mental notes there.
Yeah, I think the big thing to me was the shift. I mean, as a younger man, I think I liked V more.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's the good guy.
Yeah, but I mean,
so
it's easy to
root for the good guy, and I think looking at it, you can see the nuance.
Yeah,
that Alan Moore has put into it.
Yeah,
I think that makes it a better book.
It does, certainly.
So I think I appreciate it more now.
I do too.
I think I see what's going on more clearly. Because there's a lot of it I didn't get when I read it when I was like 21.
Yeah, I agree. Same thing for me. You see a lot more of the gray. I certainly do. Oh wait, there's one other thing I wanted to discuss. The mask getting adopted by Anonymous.
Right.
And I think that's really interesting because I don't think they are drawing upon the idea that, you know, V is also a psychopath. Mm-hmm. You think he's this righteous figure.
Well, that's kind of who they are to an extent.
Yeah, that's true.
They see themselves as righteous psychopaths. They're breaking laws. To, you know, they've done some good things. You know, they set up like bulletin boards in the like the crackdowns in Iran for people to, you know, send information.
Yeah.
You know, about people that are missing and whatnot. I mean, they've done some good, you know, some pro-social things in their time.
They have.
They've just done some of them in some terrible ways. That, and it's not hard for an organization of strangers and unnamed people. Anyone can take up the banner and say, I'm Anonymous and I'm going to shoot this guy in the head.
Yeah. And the Guy Fawkes mask, it's made it extremely popular. I found this interesting photo set of the factory workers making the Guy Fawkes masks.
Right.
And it's just, you know, it's impoverished Asian nation where, you know, it's, you know, people getting paid pennies on the hour to make these masks, which are supposedly, you know, this symbol of, you know, freedom.
Yes.
When, you know, yeah, you're this plastic is being made by people who are eating on 5 cents a day.
And that is why I generally don't think much of anarchists. The world is really nuanced, and it's, I don't know.
Yeah, it's very like, oh, look, you have white people problems. As Louis C.K. likes to say it, you're not worried about your head getting chopped off tomorrow. You're worried about if the guy at Starbucks can get your order right.
That would just ruin my day.
Ruin your day.
Ruin my day.
So, That was V for Vendetta by Alan Moore and David Lloyd. And we're going to segue right into our final segment of the week, Rant and Raven with Alan Moore, a.k.a. the original writer. The original writer, Alan Moore. It is Eric's turn to write and read a monologue in Alan Moore's voice. So I'm going to give it to him. Take it away, Eric.
You have to give me a moment to get into character.
I understand.
I think I've found it. It's right about here. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay, good. I find George R. R. Martin in the enviable position of screenwriter and producer in the television adaptation of A Song of Ice and Fire. Many years ago, before my years of insufferable treatment at the hands of DC Comics, I was actually quite interested in film adaptations of my works. For instance, Watchmen. And, like Martin, I was very interested in taking a proactive role in directing my work into this new medium. While Martin seems to be able to keep his vision alive, I thought I would take this moment to truly address the elephant in the room, George R. R. Martin's pitiful excuse for a beard. Proper beard care is important to any writer or shaman, and I personally believe Martin should have more respect for himself. Much of having a luscious beard is genetic, and it may be that Martin should simply accept that his just doesn't have the genetic gifts that I, for existence, do. There are, however, a number of pro-health conditioners that can strengthen hair follicles, as well as symbiotic organisms that can be employed to fend off beard mites.
What?
In most pictures of George R. R. Martin, it is clear he has a problem with beard mites. As it stands, the condition of his beard is deplorable for an author of his standing, and I can only hope that he takes proper notice of this grim warning. My beard, for the curious, is named Sally.
I get a golf clap for that.
That's me applauding. That was pretty good. I like that. That was good. symbiotic relationships.
Yeah.
Like symbiotic organisms. Like birds.
They're gonna eat your beard mites.
Like little birds.
Beard birds.
Nesting birds.
Sure.
Okay.
Alan Moore probably has birds that live in his beard.
He probably does. Along with his little finger gauntlets.
He's like a Disney wizard.
Little birds flitting around.
Yeah.
And they just go right, they just burrow in and disappear.
I think he's got three birds that live in his beard, and they're all named after Greek philosophers. I don't know which ones.
Plato, Socrates, Aristotle.
That works.
That's the big three. I mean, if you're gonna...
Well, they would have to be more obscure.
No. I can't name any more obscure ones off the top of my head. So, folks, that magnificent performance was Rant and Raven with Alan Moore,
the original writer.
He was the first.
The first.
And that brings this episode of the Handsome Boys Comics Hour to a close.
So what are you going to do? Are you going to buy yourself a half-iversary present?
I think so. I'll get myself a half. I'll go out tomorrow and buy like a video game that I can play until I get a job.
That sounds logical.
So, folks, next week we're doing Battling Boy Volume 1 by Paul Pope. It's a very fun book. I'm very excited for Eric to read it. And this is the end of episode 26 of the Halfiversary. We made it this far. Let's keep it going. We are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You find us every day at handsomeboyscomicshour.com. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/handsomeboyscomicshour. Like us. Leave us comments. Just leave us funny memes of Steelhead. We like those.
Yes. He puts murder and birthday.
Go to iTunes, search Handsome Boys Comics Hour. Like us there. You can't like us on iTunes. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, though, and you can leave us good reviews, more subscriptions, more listeners. We want more listeners. Spread the word. You can find us at Twitter, @HBC Hour. You can find us on Tumblr, handsomeboyscomicshour.tumblr.com. You can find me, Robbie Dorman, on Twitter at MixmasterCereal, MixmasterCereal. I know it's a mouthful. Tweet me there. I'll respond. Tell me stuff. Exciting news.
I'll tell you things.
I don't want you to tell me things.
Sweet nothings.
Not okay, sweet nothings are acceptable. You can also email us at handsomeboyscomics@gmail.com. You can email us there. Again, email stuff. We want responses from our viewers. No one responded about if Nightmare Before Christmas is a Christmas or a Halloween movie. We got no response. Come on. Let us know. We're going to keep this poll open for a year, and next Halloween, we'll settle it with a fight to the death.
I watched it the other day. That is solidly a Christmas movie.
I still disagree.
Eric. It's like almost all of it is Christmas. Almost all of it. It ends in Halloween Town, but they're still friggin'. It's on Christmas Day it ends.
I think we've made our views clear.
Yes.
Please weigh in. Let us know which one of us right. Which one of us is right and which one of us is Eric.
Apparently you're Eric this time.
Oh, am I? Well,
that's friggin' wrong.
Eric, where can they find you and your stuff online?
My stuff. You can find stuff at stuff.com. I think I'm broken. You can find my portfolio at freewillunlimited.com and most of the other stuff I get on up to at ericzgoodnight.com. And you can tweet at me. My Twitter handle is Mr. Bad Example, spelled MR Bad Example. Wee.
Ask him for beard tips.
I can. I will tell you about all of the symbiotic beard organisms.
Symbiotic beard organisms. That's what you come to this podcast for. That's symbiotic true. Beard organisms. So until next time, folks, have a good one.
Rock and roll. Robbie, you're a huge douchebag, and I hope you can hear me. Robbie is currently unavailable for video calling.
You need to get back on the internet, God damn it. You son of a bitch.